That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Hoosier Huddle podcast. I'm Sammy Jacobs. Along with me is TJ Inman and the great Andy Graham, back from England at the IU spring game on Thursday night. We'll break that down. But first, TJ, how are you doing?
Yep, doing great. Just excited to talk about sort of football. Excited to talk about an actual game. I know Curtis and Nettie definitely made it clear this is a glorified practice, but I had fun watching it, and I think the players had fun playing. It seemed like there was some energy on the field and some, you know, a little bit of urgency to be the side that came out on top. I thought it was a fun evening.
Yeah, Andy, how are you? Welcome back from England. Welcome back to being part of the show.
No, I really appreciate it. Thanks. You're saving me from having to watch my Cardinals lose again right now, so I'm grateful for that. But yeah, it was a fun, festive and encouraging evening the other night. And you know, it's a glorified practice, as Coach Cignetti said, but, I liked what I saw. I mean, I liked the play. I liked the play design. I liked, watching linemen pull in conjunction with tight end motion, both hitting the point of attack to create a seal, on a running play. I liked the kind of misdirection that allowed people to get open in the flat. No, it looked like a, you know, for a short period of time that the coaching staff has had these guys and the limited number of practices that they've had, I mean, it looked like a pretty efficient, pretty well-coached team. There weren't many penalties. There wasn't much in the way of lack of execution. So they played quickly. And I liked it. I mean, it was fun to watch. It was the play calling was you know, and obviously everything's going to be a bit vanilla on both sides of the ball. But, you know, we saw a little bit of innovation and imagination even on the play calling. And so I enjoyed it. And I think it was a pretty good crowd, given that the weather forecast was daunting. And I think it was a successful evening all around.
Yeah, I agree. Sitting in the stands, TJ, it was a lot more full than I expected. I brought my wife, Sarah, down. She expected it just to be, you know, a couple of crazy IU football fans. And, you know, it looked pretty packed on TV. And so, you know, it was probably pretty packed up between the 30s to the portals on the east side. Mm. You know, you probably got around 5,000 people there. You obviously lucked out on the weather. We beat the Storms home. A couple things stood out to me that were said on the TV broadcast that we didn't know during the game. This is their first time tackling all spring, which I thought is interesting. It's a little unconventional, but Kirk Cignetti has done a lot of unconventional things. Didn't take his full 15 practices, gets him in and out and stuff like that. But overall, yeah, it was a real football with real tackling, you know, for 30 minutes. And, you know, you saw good, bad, some ugly, but, you know, some pretty encouraging signs going into fall. What was your takeaways, TJ, from the TV broadcast?
I enjoyed Rhett Lewis on TV commentary. He's really good. He is really good at what he does. He's great on the radio. And, of course, you know, I was not surprised that he was great doing the color commentary for Big Ten Network on that. You're right. It did present as a good crowd. And that's encouraging. You know, we hear of the buzz and we feel that surrounding the off season, surrounding the hire of Curt Cignetti, it was nice to see people show up. You know, I'm sure curious to see, hey, what is the buzz about? Hopefully those people had a good experience and, you know, are interested in either getting season tickets or buying some single game tickets and showing up to carry that good crowd over. In terms of on field, yes, Kurt Cignetti mentioned that they'd done thud hitting, which is going to be you're just not taking the guy to the ground during their previous scrimmages. So I kind of think more and more programs are going to that. I think you're seeing limited tackling throughout the spring. Injuries are such a big concern. Injury prevention is a big emphasis for teams. And IU did not get anybody hurt, as far as we know. Nobody was injured during the spring game. That's a big win. To get out of the spring without any additional injuries is a win for Indiana football. In terms of what we saw from the coaching staff, the offense, Andy's right, it's going to be vanilla, but definitely noticeable more 4 and 5 wide receiver sets, not necessarily 5 wide receivers, but 4 wide receivers, and then flexing that running back out to be a 5th pass catcher, or a tight end to be a 5th pass catcher. So 5, maybe 6 pass catchers going through formations, you know, maybe after a bit of blocking, that running back leaks out or that tight end leaks out. So difference in formations there, kind of some different personnel groupings than what IU fans have seen recently. We're not surprised given how good that wide receiver room looks. I think they're going to have a difficult time keeping all those guys happy. And that's a good problem to have. Obviously, Anderson Kobe, standout performance for him. I think there are still the concerns. Can he consistently catch the ball? He did have one. There was a laser fired at him, went through his hands, dangerous pass that could be picked off. That's the type of play that Anderson Kobe has had throughout his career. However, he also showed exactly what he can do when he does catch the ball. That speed is a real difference maker for Indiana if the coaches can trust him to consistently catch the ball. Other receivers that you saw out there, Elijah Surratt got a little bit of work. Miles Price, I thought, looked great as a slot guy. I think that the big difference for me with this IU receiver group, and possibly the running backs as well, guys that when they have the ball can make people miss and make things happen after the catch. That has been sorely lacking over the past couple of seasons, and I think Indiana has that this year. They've got multiple guys that can make a catch. Might not be far down the field, you know, but that improves your offensive efficiency when you have players that can catch it 4 or 5 yards down the field and turn that into a 20-yard gain because they make the first and second tackler miss. So very encouraging there to get that, just a little taste of it from guys like Miles Price and Anderson Kobe as well. Donovan McCauley, obviously, with that touchdown, showing what he can do in the red zone. We knew that. I'll let somebody else kind of talk about what they saw from the quarterbacks. It was Rourke and Jackson getting 90% of the work. Tyler Terry got like 2 series. You know, I think Rourke settled into the game and Jackson showed the highs and the lows of what he brings.
Well, I think I agree with all of that. And I think what we're really talking about here is the pass setting up the run. I think that's going to be the main shift in the general sense in terms of what Indiana does on offense, as opposed to the last couple of years where they've been trying to run the ball initially, which I thought was kind of counterintuitive given the personnel available. So to me, it was encouraging to see the pass set up the run. Look, Taven Jackson came out and went 10 for 11 in the first 2 drives.
Yep.
Just really, really sharp. And balls, I mean, making the right read, getting the ball out on time. The little skinny post for the touchdown was beautifully done. And then, yeah, I mean, he finished 11 of 15, but I'll just put it this way, just in terms of unofficial stats here, the number one unit with Rourke had over twice as many snaps as the number two unit had. The number two unit gained almost twice as much per play as the number one unit did. So that's another thing that Taven Jackson kind of brought. I was looking for Rourke to throw downfield a little bit more. And when he finally did, actually, it was an incomplete pass because it was so well defended I think by Jones, but man, the ball was perfect. I mean, the ball was exactly where it needed to be, and it took a good defensive play to break it up. So as TJ said, I thought Rourke grew into the game. Rourke looks like a guy who absolutely can be a power five successful quarterback. He's had 33 career starts. I mean, if you're talking about who do I think is going to start in the fall, Rourke has that advantage over Taven and anybody else in the stable because he's got all of this experience. But I'll tell you what, in my eyes, I mean, just for a glorified practice spring game, Taven Jackson really made an argument for himself. And yeah, I mean, there were a couple of times at the end where he and the receivers weren't quite on the same page in terms of, you know, when the ball or where it would be thrown, which is going to happen in a new offense. But the thing you said about the injuries too is just a big deal. And I think Coach Signetti's approach is intelligent in that regard. Miles Price, we mentioned him. He should have made a touchdown catch at the end of the final drive. And it looked like he had a hamstring tweak, which probably helped him lose the catch. But on that last drive, I mean, it's like I wrote it down here somewhere. Rourke was 10 of 13 for 63 yards and a touchdown in the drive where you have to go win the game.
Yeah.
You know, he was very efficient, got the team downfield and should have had the touchdown pass initially, but just on the next play threw just a really nice ball low and outside where only his receiver could get it for what was a clinching touchdown. So the quarterback play was really good. I mean, we talked about this during the offseason a little bit. I think it's the best quarterback room since, you know, we had a healthy Michael Penix and Peyton Ramsey on campus. And that was a pretty good situation. And I think this one's a pretty good situation too.
One point on Rourke, obviously it's just, you know, touch the quarterback and he's down. Yeah. I was impressed, not necessarily surprised, but impressed by how thick and big he is.
He's an athlete.
Did not look out of shape. That's not what I'm suggesting, but I don't think there's any concern of him being able to, you know, withstand the rigors of the Big Ten compared to the MAC. He's a big player that I think can do a bit of damage on those zone read plays if he reads them correctly. He's not a burner, but I think he can be kind of tough to bring down as kind of a power quarterback runner, something that Taven might not offer.
I agree. And there were a couple of times, even during the scrimmage, where Rourke kept the ball. And because of the, you know, touch football kind of aspect when regarding the quarterbacks, they blew him dead after a yard, but he was going to gain four or five more. And easily looks like a strong kid. And I mean, the early returns are encouraging with the quarterbacks. There's no doubt. And as I said, I was especially impressed with Taven. I don't know how you could not be. I mean, he looked really sharp and his ball looked really good. And we all know, you know, the talent level that's there. I mean, we saw it in the second half of the Louisville game last year. I mean, we know it's there. And I have a feeling, I mean, look, we're talking about a coaching regime here that has – what is it? Out of the last 5 years, they've had four different guys at quarterback earn conference player of the year. I mean,
that guy last year didn't start the first game.
No, exactly. And so I think they can take a kid like Taven and really make something out of him. And the same is true of Cherry as well. Of course, we didn't get to see much and he's just getting his feet wet. But I'm encouraged by, look, let's face it. I heard a podcast this offseason with former IU coach Cam Cameron made a point that I hadn't really thought about in this general sense before. He was asked about what he thinks about modern football and what's the key to success in modern football. And he said, the team with the best quarterback wins. He said, you know, whatever level you're talking about, from high school on up to the NFL, generally speaking, whoever has the best quarterback has the best chance to win the game. And I think that's what we're talking about here. And I think the quarterback position at Indiana has been upgraded. So,
yeah, I think you have a plan at quarterback too, where in a perfect world, if everything goes to plan, Rourke starts this year, Taven's a backup, and Taven's that bridge in 2025 to Tyler Cherry as either a redshirt sophomore or you know, a year later. That's if you drew it up, that's what you want. And things like that. I thought I was impressed with Taven, although I'm never sold on Taven because we saw it last year. He could look great, and then he could look not so great the next drive and stuff like that. He needs to start putting it together, which gave you back-to-back drives, and that those first two drives gave you a lot of hope that, hey, you're going into the season. I don't think it's a quarterback battle, but you could feel comfortable that if something happened to Rourke, Taven could come in, and you really don't, you know, hopefully don't lose a step like you have the last couple of years, where the drop off between the starter and the backup is a really deep chasm.
Yeah, I agree with that. And as I reiterate, look at what this staff has done with quarterbacks.
Yep.
Yeah. So I have a lot of optimism in regard to the kind of player I think Taven Jacks is going to turn into.
Yeah, yep. And the weapons that they have,
yep.
We haven't mentioned the running backs yet. I thought Kalen Black and Tyson Lawton in particular, both JMU transfers, boy, they look really good. They look really good. There was multiple examples of patience, vision, and then explosiveness to quickly see the hole, hit the hole, without dancing around, see the hole, hit the hole, and then use a combination of power and speed to pick up a good gain. Kalen Black is a guy that I think Sammy and I, you know, both feel really good about. Tyson Lawton looked his equal right there. I think it was, you know, I was sad to see Trenton Howland go just because I like big running backs. I like to have that as an option. In short yardage situations, something that IU never really used Howland in all that much. And I'm sure they had their reasons for that. But after the spring game, it was clear, oh, well, that's why Trenton Howland might be leaving. Those guys are better. Those guys looked better than he did at any point. I thought they were extremely impressive. And credit to the offensive line as well. It's hard to block in a spring game when the defensive line only has to touch the quarterback. They don't have to tackle him to get a sack. For the most part, the running backs had lanes to run through, and the quarterbacks had fairly clean pockets, particularly for a spring game. Now,
the running backs helped with the pass pro too.
They did. They were good at that as well. Yeah. Yeah. Now that might pivot to the concern, right? Is, okay, quarterbacks had clean pockets. Running backs were pretty successful. Defensive line was the concern for us going in, and I don't think anything we saw during the spring game really alleviates those particular concerns. That's something the coaching staff is very aware of. The numbers just aren't there for the defensive line, particularly on the interior right now. Now, they're missing James Carpenter, and he's potentially the best interior defensive lineman that they have. So, you know, fair point there, but I still think that is the area of concern that needs to be addressed. And we saw that kind of play out during the spring game as well.
I agree with that. And it's one of the tougher things to find in the portal too.
Yeah.
The interior defensive linemen are at a premium. I do think, you know, the previous staff thought Burris really had potential. I mean, like a possible NFL guy. And I still think that. I think he could be really good. I think Carpenter's already shown he's really good. And then you got Robbie Harrison, who came in from Arizona, I believe it was.
Arizona State.
Yeah, and we haven't seen enough of him yet to really know. But he actually played pretty solidly, I thought, the other day. And then Jamari Manette was the other guy. So you got like four guys, but you need more, and you need more size. And that's hard to get in the portal, but I know they're going to do their level best to do it. One thing I like is number 10, Aiden Fisher, is playing behind those guys. I like that. I can tell you that already. You know?
People, I went back and watched a lot of the JMU games from last year. Aiden Fisher came in, I think, in game two as a starter. And from that moment on to this spring game, his growth is unbelievable. He's turned into a guy. He reads plays very well. He's a sound tackler. he looks the part of a Big Ten linebacker. He's not one of these G5 linebackers who are undersized.
There's a little Michael McFadden in there, don't you think?
There is, and there's a little Kirk Cignetti bravado on the on the TV broadcast.
I love that quote, man.
He said, "Don't worry, Bloomington, winning is coming."
Yeah, he basically said, "We don't take losing lightly. We're not going to do a lot of that here.
Yep.
Winning is coming to Bloomington," and it was like, that's music to a lot of ears.
Yeah, and then Jalen Walker will probably be his running mate there. Another guy on the edge, Jacob Magnum Ferrara, was noticeably bigger than he was last year. Watching from the stands, he's noticeably thicker. I think with more work on technique and some pass rusher moves, he could be a real player on the edge as well. And then
he and Kamara are a pretty good pair out there, I think.
Yeah.
And then
you got Lynnell Carr started 10 games last year. Yeah. I mean, as I said, we need help in the interior more than we needed end. I think we got some ends. I really do. I think we got some edge guys.
Yeah. And then go ahead, DJ.
I think that another quick point on Fisher, for fans who don't know, in helmet communication, the green dot, that is coming to college football, the defense is allowed one player in the game with the in-helmet communication. For most teams, that is going to be, you know, your one of your linebackers is probably who it's going to be. Some teams might have that at safety, perhaps, but for Indiana, it's going to be Fisher. He's going to be kind of that quarterback of the defense. So extremely important player for IU's defense. We'll see. A quick thing for Amari Farrell. You know, a lot's expected of him. He made a couple of nice plays. Both safeties, Terry Jones and Sean Asbury, moved like Big Ten safeties, looked like Big Ten safeties out there. Both of them made good plays on the ball during the game. So that was encouraging as well.
I like the corner play too. I thought the corner play was really good all night. Jameer Johnson played well. Kirby Minor, I wasn't sure Minor was going to play. He was out there playing well. Jamari Sharp, I like what we, and once again, the secondary play. So I'll tell you one thing I like, and TJ mentioned the green dot, which is important and might be kind of the key to this. One thing we did not see, which was encouraging for me, was that we didn't see the defense scrambling to line up before the snap. there was no run, and we've seen so much of that.
Yeah.
In the last few years where we're not even in position and we're not really ready when the ball is snapped. We saw none of that. Now, once again, the offense is vanilla, the defense is vanilla, but there was a lot of motion and a lot of reset by the offense in the spring game. And you didn't see the defense scrambling around trying to adjust to that. The defense was ready to go when the ball was snapped. And that was good to see. And maybe, as you say, the green dot enters into that. They're not all looking at the sideline trying to get the signal at the last minute. They've got Aiden Fisher out there telling them, and I thought that looked good.
Yeah, and the use of iPads or Microsoft Surfaces, whatever they're using on the sideline as well to look at the plays and break it down. I think that's going to have a big impact on in-game adjustments and coaching and things like that.
There's still a lot of sideline signaling. Do you see all the guys that look like
My wife they're
really
were,
bright color.
Yeah,
that was Sarah's biggest thrill was seeing the guys in the neon shirts doing all sorts of crazy signs. There's one time it looked like he was pulling down his pants. There was, and she's like, who comes up with this stuff?
I'll tell you one of the sideline apparel things that I liked was that the guys who weren't dressed but were had like sweatshirts on, these black sweatshirts, and we've always had slogans, here's the word of the season or whatever. These black sweatshirts had one word on the back of them, and it was win. It was win. It was like that's the goal. There isn't any other word other than win, and I like that too.
Yeah, let's touch on the secondary a little bit more. Terry Jones had an interception. Asbury was robbed of a pick six. because of an early sack. But man, his closing speed on that ball was terrific. Yeah. He was maybe 3-4 steps. He saw, was it Rourke? Rourke's eyes.
Yes.
And stepped in front of the pass and probably takes that as a pick six if it was a live game. And then, as we said, the cornerbacks. And don't forget, Indiana's also bringing in an FCS All-American in Doss.
Sedarius
Doss from Austin Peay. So you're getting some reinforcements there. Again, you're probably going to take a transfer portal guy there to build depth in the secondary. But, you know, that was a major question going in. I thought they played pretty well on Thursday.
You know, what we did not see, there was one on the, I think it was the Kobe play that went for 39, the long pass from David Jackson that got the offense going early. I think there was a cornerback slip on that.
Initially. He fell down.
And that was the only time pretty much, and there was one time where there was misdirection and the tight end was wide open in the flat with nobody within, you know, 20 yards of him. But what we didn't see was defensive breakdowns where somebody's just wide open right up the middle or wide open deep. It was very solidly done. I thought, you know, the defense was in good position all night. And as you say, on the one interception that did count, that was a case of a flat defender basically leaving his area and sneaking in there. That's why Jackson didn't see him. You know, it was like, and so it was nicely done. And I was just, it looked like a well-coached team, TJ and Sammy, didn't you think? I mean, for the limited amount of work that they've had, it looked like a well-coached team to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, Coach Cignetti, it was very efficient. You know, they went to a true 2-point or 2-minute drill at the end. And all that stuff. And, you know, it was, you could just see the difference. There wasn't a lot of wasted time or anything like that, or discussing, hey, are we going to do this now? Which I think in the past has been there. It was, hey, here's the script. We're going to follow the script. And, you know, if their clock needed to be adjusted, they adjusted it, and they adjusted it quickly and things like that.
I should add a caveat. If I proclaim something as looking like a well-coached team, I am in no way qualified to proclaim whether a team is well-coached or not. It just looked that way to me. So
looks more efficient, and that's what it word. Is. Just that's it seems more efficient and things like that. I know. I mean, you look at some of Urban Meyer. Everybody thinks he's a great coach, and a lot of metrics are penalties. Ohio State was always at the top of the list on penalties. So, you know, that's not how you – people judge good coaching differently. You know, ultimately it comes down to winning games, but it looks like Coach Cignetti, the continuity of that staff coming to Bloomington, they're all on the same page, even with some new pieces. And I think that's helped the players as well. You have a lot of transfers from JMU who know the system, who know the expectations of practice, and will get people in line to go through that.
At Florida and Ohio State, Urban Meyer had the talent to overcome penalties. Let's just put it that way.
That is true. Penalties on the field.
Not to mention off the field. But yeah, a team such as IU cannot afford to be, you know, tripping over itself. It has to play cleanly to play well, I think.
Speaking of clean play and special teams, it's always a big thing for IU. We didn't see any punts, but you feel good with James Evans improving again. Sean Ratcher's gone, but long snaps look pretty good. Place kicking, I'm a little concerned. You bring in Derek McCormick. I think he's, Louisiana Lafayette or Louisiana Monroe.
I think it's Monroe.
Monroe.
Louisiana Monroe. You know, he had the distance on the long field goal there, but missed it. They hit all their extra points. But to me, it was only McCormick and Quintero who kicked. You have a top kicker recruit who came in last year in Nico Radicic. I would have liked to see. That's where my my concern is what's going on with him? Is he going to the portal? Is he hurt? What's his deal? Because there were reports last year that he was also hurt. So can he be healthy enough to kick? He's supposed to be this great kicking talent. And look, it was pretty good weather except for the wind. So that's what you're going to see in the Big Ten in the fall is some windy conditions, and you can't afford to, you know, miss field goals and things like that. So, but
I would say the one field goal that missed was straight as an arrow. Yeah, it was just slightly wide right from the get go when he kicked it.
Yep.
But yeah, it had the distance, and it was straight as an arrow. It didn't fade or hook or anything.
I just have flashbacks to last year's spring game when everybody was doinking him off the post, and it just carried over into the season.
We need to find out what the deal is with Radisich because, yeah, I mean, he looks like on paper the kind of guy who could step in and give you the kicking that you need. And he hasn't been healthy, apparently, and don't know what the deal is in that regard. And so I agree with you that it would have been nice to see him. But I think they brought the kid in from Louisiana Monroe for a reason, you know.
Yeah.
You know, they're not confident that he'll be healthy, or they're not confident he'll be here, or whatever the situation might be. But you know, just looking what I saw last night, it looked solid enough. You know, it was okay. Wasn't anything to write home about, but you know, the extra points were fine. The one long field goal attempt was pretty good. It was just off a couple of feet to the right. So
yeah, it was long enough. He has the leg strength. It's
well, and that's what I'd be curious to know about kickoffs, basically. You know,
yes.
It's like I want a kicker that can just create touchbacks, basically, is what I want. So that I don't know whether Indiana has or not. We'll have to wait and see on that.
Yep. Any final thoughts on the spring game, TJ?
I thought it was an encouraging performance. You know, a game like that, you're looking at a bit of confirmation bias, right? I mean, we're predisposed to like what we see, given that's what we want, you know?
Right.
So I attempt to be careful to filter out that and try to take any of that confirmation bias out of it. And I still come away thinking, no, that is what my eyes saw. It's better. I think that there are multiple noticeable upgrades, quarterback play, wide receivers, running backs,
scheme. I would say tight end too. Scheme. I mean, Zach Horton is a good tight end.
Horton
looked good there. Defensively, I think that the secondary group, given the addition at safeties and another year of seasoning for guys like Jameer Johnson, plus hopefully health for him, Jamari Sharp, Kobe Miner, you know, another year of experience for those guys, plus, you know, just a different voice coaching wise for them. Linebacker, I think, is upgraded. I know Aaron Casey's a great player, but I think Aiden Fisher is better sideline to sideline than Aaron Casey.
A better depth there too.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. With McDonald coming in. I would agree with that. So I take all those things in the aggregate and think, no, that is what my eyes saw. It's better. So I think it's a really encouraging spring game that is just a little marker as a point to put in. Now the real work continues, because now you've got the summer, which is where your season's going to be made. You've got workouts, plans getting put in place, the spring transfer portal window now underway. It's not that the stuff before it's not really important, but the stuff after it is equally as important, and that's what they're headed into now. But all we can judge so far is what Kurt Cignetti has done since he got this job, and he's not put a step wrong thus far.
I would agree. And, you know, Sammy, you know, I'm an offensive line guy, and it was encouraging. And bear in mind, I mean, you've got Bray Lynch and Evans playing the guards, and they might not be the starting guards this fall. You know, you got people who might be in that slot otherwise. But one thing that was said during the broadcast that I took note of in a very pleasing way is that the coaching staff said the unit it had most confidence in was the offensive line.
Yes, that's which the coaching staff not been told said that, since told them 2013.
That. And they also, they also said that they felt they were absolutely eight deep right now, like now, and that yeah, that
I mean that would that, make sense. If
and, you that, get Tyler and so yeah, you know you get. So I'm just saying that by itself is pretty encouraging for me. I mean, bear in mind, I mean, you know, this team saw three starters on the offensive line leave. And I thought they were fairly good players too. I thought they were reasonably good players, you know, Carpenter and Khalil and those guys. I mean, you know, Benson. You know, so for the new staff to say we have the most confidence, and when you've got a wideout room like that, and when you got a running back room and a quarterback room like that, and you say that the unit you have the most confidence in leaving, you know, exiting the spring is the offensive line. That's a good thing. That's something that'll help, you know, every team needs a functional offensive line if it's going to be effective. And so far, so good, I think, in that regard.
Yeah. So you have Tyler Stevenson as well, Nick Kidwell, who didn't.
Kidwell.
And then I would assume that eighth guy is Noah Boltikoff, who came in from TCU. You saw two guys, Bubba Jeffries and William Larkins, hit the portal, probably because they're below that 10th guy and third string and all those stuff. Would you like IU to go 10 deep at the offensive line? Yeah, sure. But you could really do you could do really well with eight, especially with some of those guys who could play multiple positions along the line. So.
Yep.
It was an encouraging spring. TJ, we'll start with you. What needs to happen over the summer to go into the fall with a lot of momentum?
Yeah, I'll go with just the most obvious answer here. They've got to find a way to bring in a couple of capable interior defensive linemen. That's not going to be easy because there are programs with a whole lot of NIL resources that are desperate for it as well. You know, you name it, big school out there, Texas, Oklahoma, LSU, Texas A&M. I mean, you just have to look at any capable defensive lineman that hits the portal within an hour. Look at the tweets that come out. Hey, you know, CJ West has heard from, and it's a list of a who's who in college football, including Indiana. They're just going to have to find a way to find some diamonds in the rough that this coaching staff can develop enough to where they can help Indiana. You're probably, I won't say you're not, but you're probably not going to be able to bring in starting level defensive tackle at this stage. Just probably not. And that's okay. You've got to find guys that can be in your rotation that can give you some snaps so that if you have an injury along that defensive front on the interior, if, you know, you're just, you don't want to run guys into the ground by having them play too many snaps. You just need a couple more bodies that can be a part of that rotation. So that, for me, that's the biggest thing that's got to happen. And it, you're going to look at that over the next probably 2 to 3 weeks.
Well, it's interesting to build on that point, that the staff clearly intending to win right away has favored production over potential in terms of the kids that they've brought in. You know, they didn't care, you know, where they played before, whatever. I think when we're talking about this specific thing now, yeah, it might be going to places like Georgia and getting that third string guy who might be interested in portaling to come in. You know, you might have to go look at the high caliber programs and look at their reserves, see if any of those guys jump into the portal and then try to get them. It's going to be hard to find people who have been especially productive at defensive tackle and get him in here, because as TJ said, the big dogs are going to snatch those up really fast. So even though I agree with the philosophy the staff has followed in terms of production over potential, we want to win now kind of thing, I think in this instance, what you're likely to see is Indiana bringing in somebody from maybe one of the major programs who's buried on the depth chart and could come in and be a developmental piece here.
Yeah, I agree. And I saw that there was another JMU defensive tackle in the portal too. Yes. Maybe that's a guy you could go get. Again, you don't need somebody to come in and take a starting spot from Robbie Harrison or Marcus Burris. You need the guy who could come in and play 10 snaps a game, 12 snaps maximum, and give guys a blow and make that, because it always brings me back to that 2019 game against Penn State when you had CJ Person was put in on the last drive of the game, and it's like he's the fourth string defensive tackle because you have no depth there. And, you know, CO got hurt, and it just that they grinded that game away. You need a guy who can be productive there, give you 10 to 12 good plays on average a week, and, you know, really, really help keep that, you know, those top four healthy. But we'll see. Summer's important, and what's important is everybody should be healthy. And instead of rehabbing, now you're out on the field getting better, working with the robo QB, working with the actual QBs, and working with the defense and stuff like that. Too often, I think in the past, we've been rehabbing and then not getting better. So now's the time. You're not rehabbing, you're building strength, and now you're building repetitions in the summer as well.
I really want to see outside of the field, I want to see the IU Athletics Administration really make a big push now to kind of capitalize on the interest. I think Coach Cignetti has a lot of people intrigued. One thing that I like that they've already done is that, you know, I'm a season ticket holder and we bought our full season tickets, but one of my brothers-in-law took advantage of the 4-game package that they offered. So he's going to see FIU, the opener for the Cignetti era. He's going to see Maryland, Michigan, and Purdue, you know. Four pretty good games, and paid like less than half the amount that I paid for a season ticket. Those kinds of options we're overdue here, and I'm glad to see that they're being offered now. That'll help get more fannies in the seats, and that's a good thing. We've got 8 home games. Now, that's unusual. You know, it's like we're not always going to have 8 home games, but I liked how they offered that package to people. So my brother-in-law, who initially was going to forego season tickets this year, jumped on that. And so I'm glad to see that. And from what I hear, I don't know, TJ or Sammy, if you've heard about ticket sales, but I've just heard in generality that they've been very encouraging. But I haven't heard any numbers or anything like that.
Neither have I. But as a season ticket holder too, I think if you got in early on them, you got like 2 free tickets to 2 of the first 3 games, and then
that's another.
If you put in your payment by a certain date, you got another set of free tickets to another game. That included the bucket game and stuff like that, which is fantastic. I think what most people are going to be excited to see is what Levi's, the new beverage and concession people, bring to the game day, the game day experience. I think, you know, fans have been hammering IU a lot on how they run their concession stands, how things are set up. Now you're professionalizing it, and you're bringing, we said it on the podcast, previewing it, TJ, previewing the spring game. Can you make this run a little bit smoother so where it doesn't take you a half an hour to get a hot dog or a beer during the game? Or like the Cincinnati game, Andy, with the water shortage. You have somebody they've done the Super Bowl, Kentucky Derby, the Grammys, NBA, you name it, the event, they've done it. And that's what, you know, I think that brand will bring to IU. And hopefully also upgrade the press box food.
Well, and upgrade the press box eventually, but that's—I don't know if I'll live.
The food,
I don't
the
know,
food,
I don't
the,
know if
the
I'll
food
live.
in the press box.
Yeah,
just
I know
the
that,
food.
but I don't know if I'll live to see a new press box. I hope I do. That would be good to see. It shouldn't be the top thing on the totem pole necessarily. Don't get me wrong, but that's something I'd love to see. What other universities have done architecturally, and then also just in terms of functionality, yeah. with their media stuff has been terrific. And I mean, you can walk into Purdue's press box or Michigan's or Northwestern's. And in Northwestern, you got a beautiful view of the lake, but
not anymore.
Not anymore right now. But to me, it's part of being a big time program.
There you go.
It's like if you invite the national media in here to cover the Ohio State game or whatever it might be, something like that, or the Michigan game this year, you want to put your best foot forward, and right now we really can't. We can't do that, and it's a minor thing. But then again, I mean, you're talking about a new coaching staff that intends to, not reinvigorate, but reinvent the brand of Indiana football. And that's part of it. That's part of it. Well, what do you show people when they come in here?
Also, if you expand the press box, you build more suites, and that brings in some revenue that I think eventually will end up, we'll get to players being paid and professionalized and all that stuff. But eventually I think, the more revenue you bring in is going to be more important. But right now, any revenue you could bring in extra from suites and all that stuff to upgrade stadium, upgrade indoor facilities, put all the little bells and whistles on things that you need to. Anytime you could make more money to where you don't have to hit up the donors all the time would be fantastic.
Okay, here's a question for you. It's kind of frivolous in a way, but I want to. What would you guys think about this? If they do add a new press box and suites, okay, would you have it on the east end or the west end where it is now? I think you could if you build it on the east end, those people are going to be looking into the sun during afternoon games. So there's that aspect of it. But I think architecturally, if you're talking about making the stadium more of a bowl and more balanced architecturally, I might put it on the east side. What do you guys think?
I think you cut off the top few rows of the west side, lower the west side a little bit, and put a big press box on the west side that way. And then maybe kind of like what they did at Wisconsin, if you have the interest, put a row of suites on the top side of the east side.
Mm, on the east side as well. Okay. Yeah.
That, I mean, that's with unlimited money and resources and all that stuff. But
yeah.
Well, a boy can dream,
Yes.
I would like to see them do
what they're doing at Florida State and do those insert suites. And, if you take the fit between the 30s, about 25, maybe 30 rows up, clear those seats out and put in those insert suites, that would help too. You lower capacity of the stadium, which makes it look better on TV and all that stuff. But yeah, anything to generate revenue, anything to get people in the stadium, and anything to not, hey, we almost blew up the press box. Zach Green plugged his computer in and the outlet caught on fire. And I remember some early season games where the air conditioning's leaking from the ceiling onto, I believe it was either Andy or Pete.
Yep. Oh, well, anyway, the biggest thing that needs to happen is just winning. And it's not easy to do. I think sometimes fans don't understand what a zero sum game it is. For every victory, there's a defeat.
Yeah.
It's like there, it isn't like all the programs can win all the time. There's always going to be, there's a loser for every winner, and the other team is full of scholarship players and full of NIL money and coaches who are dedicated to winning. And it's not easy to do, but I have to say, I like the persona, at least the public persona, that Coach Signetti and the new staff is putting forward. It's all business. It's no nonsense. It's about winning. And that's the goal. It's not just an overarching goal. It's the it's the goal that eclipses everything else, basically. And it's just kind of, it's just refreshing. I mean, look, you guys know I'm a big Tom Allen fan, and somebody that I liked personally, and I'll be grateful for everything that he all the effort that he put in here. And obviously we had some successful times with Tom here. And all of that was really good. And I loved the philosophical foundation of Tom's program too. But it's kind of a splash of water in the face right now with Cignetti coming in and basically being a hard ass. There's no niceties here. We're really serious about what we're doing here. And he's going to change the perception of Indiana football. And if Indiana starts winning, and he's never had a losing season in 13 years as a head coach, it reminds me, I think I told you guys when we first talked about this, I'm an old Green Bay Packer fan, and Vince Lombardi was hired from the New York Giants to come in 1958. And he was there for the 1959 season. The Packers had just come off a 1-10-1 season, I think it was. They had talent. They had some guys. They had Paul Hornung. They had some people. And Lombardi walked into the very first team meeting, and the very first thing he said to the Packer players was, "Gentlemen, I've never been involved with a losing football team, and I do not intend to start now." And that's exactly what we're seeing from another Italian coach right now.
Well, that's going to wrap us up for the spring game review podcast. If you haven't checked out the broadcast on BTM Plus, or if you had it on your DVR, do so. It definitely gave you a different perspective. Rhett did a great job on a color analyst. You can follow us at Hoosier_Huddle on Twitter. Come back to HoosierHuddle.com. We have all the wrap-up stuff, and we'll take you through the summer all the way up to kickoff, 100-day countdown. We'll be coming up around Memorial Day again, and we'll have portal needs. TJ just posted that one today, and what we learned from the spring and heading forward. So thank you all, and thanks for listening.
Good to see you guys. Good to see you, TJ. Back to the pool.
Thank you, Andy. Yeah, have a good week, everybody.
See you, bud.